I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me today. It's July 23rd, 2013. Gosh, I was going to say some other year. 2013. And here we are. It's a lovely summer day. I think we're kind of over the heat spell. I hope. I've been trying to keep cool. And just before we get started with my first interview today, I wanted to remind you, you know, you can call in and ask questions. The number is 1-888-874-4888. And you may know this, you can email me anytime during the program or anytime during the week, info@realmeals.org. And a couple of other things going on. I wanted to mention some of my friends, Betsy Carson, who's producing the vegan mashup season, has got a Kickstarter going on to get season two going with Terry Hope Romero, Miyoko Shinner, and Tony Fiore. And if you want to help, they're looking for funding, and they've got 4 days to go to reach their goal. So if you Google Kickstarter or vegan mashup, you should be able to find it. If you want to help, that would be a lovely, lovely thing to do. Okay, now let's get to my first very wonderful guest. Dr. Pam Popper is a naturopath, an internationally recognized expert on nutrition, medicine, and health, and executive director of the Wellness Forum. She has helped tens of thousands of people regain their health and has helped many employers reduce healthcare costs with worksite health improvement programs for employees, and is the founder of the Wellness Forum Institute for Health Studies. She appeared as an expert in the acclaimed film Forks Over Knives. Welcome to It's All About Food.
Well, thank you for having me.
Hi, it was really lovely meeting you at the Ben Bella anniversary celebration in Brooklyn at the Gutter. That was a really hip bowling alley place and a really nice party.
That was fun. That was a great event. Of course, we were celebrating. Everybody's got a new book out, including me. That was fun.
Yeah, well, I'm excited because I'm going to be talking to not only you, but Dr. Campbell later on, and also Baba Ram, who wrote Warrior Pose. I don't know if you got to read that book, but
I have it. It's on my stack. I always have like 100 books that I haven't yet read, and the problem is I keep buying more. I'm like a book junkie.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But that's, I mean, I guess I could have worse habits, right?
Right. Well, that was really an inspirational story, and I didn't even know until the end that he went vegan. So that was like an extra bonus in the whole story. Okay, let's get to the meat of the conversation today. That's the plant-based meat, of course.
Of course.
And, okay, so you have helped so many people, and I'm sure that's made a lot of people happy, and that must mean a lot to you.
Well, it does, and it's why I love coming to work every day, and I think it's such a contrast. You know, if you talk to people in the healthcare field, most of them are pretty disenchanted with it. They don't like it. They're not making money. They're just depressed and discouraged, and it's not fun and the whole nine yards, and that's just such a contrast to the way that people who practice and administer healthcare the way that we do see things, because when people come in here, they get well, and then they're happy, and they love you, and you guys never get tired of that. So, yeah, we've helped a lot of people, and it's a very gratifying experience, and I can't ever imagine doing anything other than this.
Now, a lot of people who enter the healthcare industry, especially doctors, I think, really have a good motive. They want to help people get well, and then over time, falling into the system, whatever, it must be really frustrating.
Well, it is, and part of the problem is that nobody, including me, was taught how to cure anybody of anything. It's all about symptom mitigation. And of course, if you're a traditional medical doctor, symptom mitigation is with pharmaceutical drugs. And if you're trained as a naturopath like me, symptom mitigation is with supplements. But it all points to the same end, which is the patient feels better while he or she gets worse, because you're not addressing the underlying cause of what, you know, what caused the illness, which is almost always related to diet and lifestyle choices. And so I'm sure it's frustrating for a physician to spend a small fortune to go to school to learn how to be a doctor, to watch people get worse instead of better, and crankier instead of nicer. And at some point in time, you say, gosh, I don't think this is what I signed up for. And then, as you mentioned, you fall into the institution of medicine, which is, I think, kind of an unsavory business these days, and that makes it even less fun.
Okay, so you've created the Wellness Forum, and before I get into some of the questions that I have with your book, why don't you tell us about the Wellness Forum?
Well, the Wellness Forum is in business to help people to change their health outcomes by making diet and lifestyle change. So we offer educational programs that lead to that result. And then there are so many applications for programs like that. So we help individuals who want to regain their health. We help companies to lower health insurance costs by going into the worksite and teaching people how to eat and exercise their way out of the conditions that are costing their employers so much money. We own a school, so we teach healthcare professionals how to practice differently. We make up for the training that they're not getting through their traditional education. And we have a foundation that goes into schools and provides educational programming to school children and teachers that isn't sponsored by industry. So lots of different applications for the same message, which really is that most of what we spend our time, money, and resources on in this country from a healthcare perspective is degenerative disease, and I call these foodborne illnesses. You eat your way in, and we can show you how to eat your way out.
And you're located in Ohio.
We're located in Ohio, but we do business all over the United States and in many, many foreign countries, because all of our programming can be done via distance learning. So we have conference calls and books and DVDs, and you can participate no matter where you are. And so we have members in Bulgaria and Iceland and Greece and all over the place. It's really kind of interesting, the different types of people we get to interact with. It's and it's also interesting that the problems are the same everywhere. In other words, I think there may be a few little oases of health that are left on the planet where people are actually kind of trim and doing well from a health perspective, but in almost every country now, you've got a large population of people who are overfed, overweight, and undernourished and sick, and that's, I guess, great for business, but not so great for mankind.
Yeah, it's kind of an amazing thing how we got to this place. Sometimes I wonder, are humans just meant to suffer? And as we become more affluent and we have means, are we just looking for new problems? Are we just creating these problems? Because these are problems we know how to fix.
Well, I don't think that we're looking for problems, and I don't think that humans are meant to suffer. I think the problem is that we're living in an environment for which we're not very well adapted. In other words, if you look at our history on the planet, we didn't used to have to make choices about food. Nobody went to the grocery store 1,000 years ago and wandered around with 200 choices of ice cream. So humans ate locally grown, available food, inexpensive food, unless you were part of the royal class, and it had a protective effect. And in places in the world where people still, mostly for financial reasons, eat that way, they don't suffer from chronic degenerative conditions. So what's happened is our ability to produce massive amounts of food inexpensively, some of which I would not even classify as food. I mean, you read the labels on some of these packages, and there's nothing food in it. It's just chemicals and coloring agents. But we live in a land that is filled with this stuff, and we don't really teach people how to make the right choices when given the choice between good and bad choices. And so that's where our problem is. Humans, for the first time in their lives, can choose anything they want at any time of the day or night, and they invariably make poor choices because they don't know the consequences of doing so.
You know, it's funny. I don't know if you hear the little chimes in the background, but the ice cream truck is around my neighborhood. And you're saying you don't even have to go to the grocery store. It comes to you.
You
barely have to move.
Absolutely. Well, and that's the other thing, too, is our whole existence is set up now so that you don't have to move. We've got cordless phones. We don't have to get up and answer the phone. We've got remotes on our TV. Our jobs are sedentary. I mean, you know, I'm sitting here talking to you, which is why I have to go out and run, because so much of what I do, I'm sitting at a desk or on the phone. So we really have to work hard to do the things that human beings are designed to do, which is to eat a plant-based diet and to be physically active, because our natural lives these days, the way that they trend, doesn't really provide either of those things.
All right, now let's get to food over medicine. So I like the style. It's a conversation between you and Glenn Meritzer. Mm-hmm. We almost feel like we're right there with you getting the information. It's very comfortable, easy, very easy to understand.
Yes, and I have to give Glenn the credit for it. It was actually his idea. And I also have to say, I think I'm pretty smart about diet, health, and medicine, and I know a lot of stuff. But to the extent that this book is fun to read, I also give Glenn the credit for that. He's a marvelous, marvelous writer, and I think he took what could be a rather dry subject and turned it into something interesting, easy to follow, and easy to understand. And so I have to give him the credit for that. I'll take credit for the ideas, but I'll give him the credit for the writing, because he deserves it.
Okay, thank you, Glenn. And so let's talk about some of the things just to whet people's appetite about the book.
Well, I think let's start with the reason I wanted to write this book. There are so many books about diet and health and medicine right now, so why do we need one more? And I think the first thing is I have some things to say about diet that I think haven't been covered real well, and I wanted to say those things. But I think the big point that I wanted to make, and it's very important, is that you can watch every morsel you put into your mouth and eat what we might term a plant-perfect diet, and you still can end up having adverse health consequences as a result of your interaction with the medical community if you're not an educated medical consumer. I mean, the days are over when you can just show up in a doctor's office and do what you're told, because doctors are trained to administer tests and treatments and drugs and supplements, most of which are useless and many of which are harmful. And so what I really want to do is I want consumers to be educated medical consumers. And, of course, the exception to the rule, you know, is if you're involved in some type of traumatic event like a car accident, boy, you want to go to the hospital and do what they tell you to do so they can save your life. But what most of us are engaging in is not that. It's regular trips to doctors where we are recommended all kinds of things are recommended, ranging from diagnostic testing to drugs and supplements, as I mentioned, and a great deal of it is not really a very good idea.
All right, I want to talk quickly about breast cancer and prostate cancer, because you mentioned some really scary things in your book about people getting diagnosed and then being treated for something that they really shouldn't be treated for.
Well, you know, the problem with diagnostic testing is that, first of all, we now have such great imaging equipment, and that sounds like it would be great, but we're actually diagnosing people at, and they might be better off not knowing that anything is wrong. In other words, the U.S., but let's start with prostate cancer, because that's a little bit easier situation. The U.S. Preventive Services Task Force has now said that prostate cancer screening is PSA testing, as it were, is useless for men of all ages. And the man who invented the test has said it's not really very useful. And one of the reasons is that PSA is not really a very good marker for determining if you have a form of prostate cancer that's going to kill you or that you'll die with but not of. But, you know, humans are not wired to be told that they have prostate cancer, but just forget about it, go live your life. You know, we just don't do that. So once you're diagnosed with prostate cancer, even though we have no way of knowing if it's going to turn into anything, we treat everybody as if it is. So you have some people with early stage or really slow-growing cancers that they'd be better off not knowing about, and during all kinds of treatments, and, you know, often lead to incontinence and impotence and that sort of thing, and a great deal of that treatment's just unnecessary. If you look at breast cancer, mammography does not reduce the risk of dying of breast cancer. And in fact, it's quite harmful. You know, about 1 out of 2,000 women will get some benefit from mammography screening, and for every woman that benefits, we actually kill six. And I meant what I said, kill six. And so, you know, mammography, I don't think most women who engage in and have mammograms know that, and I don't think many of them would choose it if they really understood that. So that's an example of how we misuse diagnostic testing. And one other thing I want to mention is the other thing we don't talk much about is when people have these tests, they think that testing is going to save their life. And so they have a test, they're told that, you know, we didn't detect anything. And then they go back to living their lives, eating a bad diet and not exercising, and well, I'll get tested next year and see if I'm still getting away with my bad habits, instead of understanding that testing isn't going to save your life. And what you better do is change your bad habits now so that you're not dealing with something that can't be fixed. You know, a lot of times people, by the time people find out that they're sick, they have something that's pretty aggressive and you can't always fix it. So, you know, diagnostic testing and early detection really are virtually useless. And people say, well, my gosh, what are we supposed to do? And I tell them, you're supposed to live the right lifestyle and eat the right diet for humans. And that's the best protection you're going to have. I mean, I wish I could tell you that all the rest of this stuff would help you, but it just doesn't.
Yeah, that's really powerful information. And I know that so many people are just scared. They're feared into going to the doctor and having to check. It's quite criminal.
Well, and doctors enthusiastically recommend this stuff and get angry if you don't do what you're told. I mean, I have people that I know who've been fired by doctors. Well, if you're not going to do what I tell you to do, you can't come here anymore. You know, just the arrogance of people.
Now, you know, I know there are a few, but I wish there were more doctors that would fire patients who didn't do the right thing. Like I remember, a doctor who wouldn't treat patients who weren't trying to quit smoking. You know, he would say, if you're not going to do the best that you can for your own health, then I don't want to participate.
Exactly. And that's the way that it should be. At the very least, we need to be having what I call the informed consent discussion. And here's the way it should go. You know, when you show up in the doctor's office and for the first time you get a blood test that shows your cholesterol is going up, the conversation should go like this. Doctor says to patient, look, your cholesterol is too high. We have a couple of options here. I can put you on a statin drug, and the best of the bunch will reduce your risk of a major coronary event or death from a coronary event by about 1.6%. Lots of side effects, pages and pages and pages of them, including cognitive decline. It's one of the top ones now. The FDA made them add that to the list. And a lot of other things that you don't want to have happen. Or I can show you how to change your diet. Your cholesterol will drop to the place where it'll be lower than your IQ within a few months, and you'll never have to worry about this stuff again. You'll be heart attack proof, and you can go on and live your life, and a lot of other bad things won't happen to you too either. So which would you like to do? And I think that most people, my experience is most people, when confronted with that stark contrast and that information, will choose to at least try the diet. But that's not what's happening. What's happening is people not only get sucked into doing all this useless diagnostic testing, but then when they find out that something is wrong, then they're told to engage in, you know, taking drugs or procedures and surgeries and biopsies and all kinds of other stuff that don't really offer much protection, and a lot of which do more harm than good also, and not even told that they could eat their way out of their conditions.
I think more people are getting the idea that a healthy plant-based diet can definitely help with heart disease and diabetes. At least I know my listeners know that because I've been talking about it for such a long time. And many people have seen the film that you were in, Forks Over Knives, which is so important and an easy way and a powerful way to get the message really fast about how food can be your medicine. But there are other illnesses that aren't getting as much press, and we'll stick with the clogged arteries for a moment and coronary artery disease. But you have a number of anecdotes in your book, different people that you've worked with, and one of them I just wanted to highlight because I know someone who has recently had something similar. So this was your story with Barry and Elizabeth, and Barry had his mind went blank, and it would last for a few minutes, and he had a lot of tests done, and all he had was high cholesterol and high blood pressure. And your interpretation of what he had I found really interesting. What should people do with a symptom like this, which can be really scary?
Well, Barry's experience was really instructive. And the first thing is the interesting parts of the story to me are, first of all, if you have friends and family who haven't listened to you yet, don't give up hope, because these are some of my dearest friends, and they've never eaten, you know, fast food and junk, like in the traditional sense, but they never really ate my diet either. And they were always really respectful and all that sort of thing, and I stay with them for a few days every year, and they always have the stuff for me to eat and everything, but they weren't eating this diet, and they weren't really too terribly much interested in changing to it. The second thing is that they have this terrible thing called good insurance. So when Barry got, this stuff started happening to Barry, he ends up at a very famed clinic in South Florida, where they spent thousands of dollars testing him. I thought this was fascinating. And in fact, when he really got frightened and he said, I want your help and I'll do anything you tell me to do, he overnighted his medical records to me, and they came in a box. Okay. I said, I need to look at all the stuff, because I'm thinking, I want to make sure I'm not missing something. They had images. I mean, he'd been in there, you know, for lots of testing. They really took advantage of the fact that he had such good insurance. So he sends me this box of medical records and all this stuff that they did and images. And I'm looking at the whole thing, and the bottom line is he had advanced coronary artery disease, and he was a candidate for either, well, they wanted him to have bypass surgery, and that scared him half to death. And he was a candidate for a heart attack. And so I called him back and I said, listen, this isn't anything exotic. As you mentioned, you've got high blood pressure and high cholesterol. Here's what you need to do. And, you know, it's time for you to eat my diet. He said, I'll do anything you tell me to do, because I don't want to have surgery. He and his wife adopted two children from Russia. And, you know, so he's got these two children. He says, and I want to be able to raise my kids and, you know, the whole nine yards. So he instantaneously converts to the diet. And of course, Elizabeth, his wife, does too, because she loves her husband and supportive and the whole nine yards. And long story short, within a few days, problem gone. I mean, when he went to back to the clinic to have a blood draw and all that sort of thing, they actually did the brachial artery tourniquet test on him. They told him he had the arteries of a 20-year-old man, and he's in his 60s. And
wow.
So within a very short time, he ate his way out of it. They both lost a lot of weight. I mean, they're both really attractive people, but you know, they look like a Hollywood couple, as I said in the book now, and it was just that simple. And he's never strayed from it, and he's never had another one of those events, and his cholesterol has stayed low, and his blood pressure is low, and he doesn't take any medications, and, you know, hopefully he'll live to be 100. And that's wonderful. I care about this story because, first of all, I want everybody to be healthy, but the second thing is these are really, really good friends, and if something had happened to Barry, it would have touched me in a very personal way. So when you get a chance to save a friend, that's really a special thing.
Yeah, and the symptom, though, is what triggered my attention, and that was simply he just blanked out for a few minutes, couldn't remember names of things. And
yeah.
You said that was impaired oxygenation to the brain from coronary artery disease, and I don't think most people really realize that.
Well, you know, I spent 3 days last week, or 2 days last week, attending a conference on nutrition and the brain, and looking at this very issue, lots and lots of presenters. And I think the thing that people don't realize is that the brain is the biggest utilizer of energy, oxygen, water. And when those arteries, you know, if you have coronary artery disease, you don't get it in one place. It's systemic. You get it everywhere. So when the arteries start to become filled with plaque and the endothelial tissue is damaged and you're not pumping out nitric oxide anymore, you don't really have that problem like just in your legs or near your heart. You've got that problem with the arteries that go to the brain also. And so that impaired blood flow starts to cause, you know, you're not only at risk of a heart attack, but you start to experience cognitive decline. And had Barry not changed his ways, he could have had a heart attack, and that could have been devastating. The other thing that could have happened is he could have ended up with Alzheimer's disease. And we see millions and millions of people right now suffering from that. It's one more foodborne condition that can be prevented, and in its early stages even helped a bit by eating the right diet and engaging in physical activity.
Yeah, plaque in the brain or plaque in the arteries, it gets you either way.
Yep, and it's preventable. And I think that's the message we have to get out to people. There's such a fatalistic attitude. Oh, you know, this runs in my family, so I'm just destined to get it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, everybody has to.
Talk about the diet. What's the food? What do you tell people to eat and not to eat?
Well, we want to get the dairy out of the diet. That's out. We want to get the oils out of the diet. No liquid, pure fat. That's just a bad idea. But the four principal food groups that our people live on are fruit, vegetables, whole grains, and legumes. So lots of potatoes and rice and beans and vegetables and salads and fruit. And, you know, just picture the freshest, most fabulous plant-based meals you can imagine. That's what we eat all day. Very little processed food. In other words, there's room for some cereal and bread and pasta and that sort of thing, but that's kind of higher up on the list. You don't eat as much of that stuff. Really minimizing the high-fat plant foods, and this is important because a lot of people will convert to a plant-based diet and they'll eat a lot of nuts and seeds and olives and coconut and, you know, that sort of thing, and boy, that'll pack the pounds on you just like animal food will. So you want to really pay attention to not having too much of that. And then if you're going to eat animal foods, no more than 2 or 3 servings a week. Must be organic or wild-caught. Less is better. None is fine, too. You certainly don't need to eat it, but we don't necessarily take it away. And then understanding that there is a place for treats. I mean, I think sometimes people look at our diet and they think, you know, how do these people have fun? Well, you know, I'll have a piece of cake at a birthday party, and champagne on New Year's Eve is nice, and, you know, there's room for that. But the problem that people get into is they don't really differentiate between food and a treat, and they start treating themselves, you know, 5 times a day, and that's how they end up in my office with some of the problems described in the book. So, you know, this stuff just needs to be occasional and situational, and I mean, you know, cookies aren't lunch, and you don't need them every day. You know, Christmas is a good time for a cookie.
Well, the thing that makes a treat is that it's special.
Yeah,
and it's
absolutely
only special if you save it for special occasions when you can enjoy
it. And along that line, you got to get this stuff out of your house. I mean, you just can't tempt yourself and play willpower games. I mean, I know a lot about why to do this. I'm pretty educated on the topic, obviously. But if I'm standing in my kitchen at 10 o'clock at night saying, huh, I got some blueberries and bananas and apples and peaches and chocolate and cookies, I mean, sooner or later, that stuff is going to call my name and I'm going to eat it. And so I really keep my environment real clean. I only have this stuff when I'm out someplace and I can have a piece of it or a bite of it, and then when I go home there isn't anymore, so I can't really hurt myself with this treat type food. So you have to get good at setting up your environment to help you succeed instead of trying to play willpower games with yourself.
Okay, I'm a big believer. I've been pushing this diet for a decade, but there's some new information all the time about how this disease can really affect, I mean, how this diet can really affect so many different illnesses. Can we just have a few more minutes left. I wanted to touch on Crohn's disease, which is becoming more and more popular, and many doctors will tell you it's not curable.
I know, and I love treating people with Crohn's disease because we can help them, and it is curable. Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, both very similar conditions, are inflammatory bowel conditions, and the life that these people lead is eventually so horrible. They have, you know, 20 bloody bowel movements before noon. They're always conscious of where the nearest bathroom is, and the pain and agony associated with this eventually results in very intensive medications, including chemotherapy drugs and sometimes bowel resection. We use a whole foods plant-based diet here. It's a little bit different protocol because you have to calm down the inflammation first, but it takes us about 3 to 4 weeks at the outside to get the inflammation calmed down so that people are having a couple, 3 bowel movements a day. And then we start very gradually adding more and more healthy plant foods to the diet and doing some probiotic treatment. And within a few months, these people are functioning normally, eating a diet very much like the one that you and I eat. There are a few additional restrictions, but not many. And they remain asymptomatic. My longest success story has been asymptomatic now for 11 years. And, of course, Jill Collette's stories in the book, she ended up working in our yoga studio here and found out that she could come and see me for free. It's one of the benefits of working here. And within just a short time, a problem that had gone on for 20 years, all cleaned up. And she's never had another episode. And this was a few years ago. So I'm always excited to work with these people for two reasons. First of all, because I know how to help them, and I'm so excited about it. And the second thing is they're so miserable that they'll do what I tell them to do. They don't argue with me, so we don't have compliance problems with this particular population. They follow directions carefully, and as soon as they start to see things improving, they do not go back.
Well, it's just amazing that so many people are plagued with this and they're told it can't be cured. It just, it's evil.
Oh, it is.
Do you ever talk to the Crohn's Foundation?
Have you seen the advice on their website? They tell these people to eat all the foods that actually cause things to get worse, and they absolutely have no interest in promoting diet. And they're not the only, I don't want to pick on them, because the MS Society doesn't have anything about diet on their website.
And the breast cancer website tell you to drink milk and...
They're funded by pharmaceutical companies and the food companies, and, you know, so we're not going to change them. What we have to do, what we're doing right now is very important. We have to get out to the consumer and let the consumer know that there's a different alternative, and eventually you just dry up the number of people patronizing these organizations and they'll go away. When everybody in America is healthy, there won't be any need for a Crohn's and Colitis Foundation. There won't be any need for the American Cancer Society. Mm-hmm. And people say, oh, Pam, you're just daydreaming. I'm really not. I really see this happening in my lifetime. I really believe that this whole medical system is going to completely be toppled, and we will be having this conversation when we're in our rocking chairs at the age of 90 saying, isn't that a fabulous thing we just watched happen?
Yeah, I can't wait for that. We're not going to be in rocking chairs, though. We're going to be running marathons.
Yeah, but there are people that do that at the age of 90, actually. I know my grandfather was working on a construction site at the age of 94 the day before he died. He just went to sleep and he didn't get up. I want that to be me.
Yeah,
not necessarily
that's
the construction site, but the we'll go to sleep and don't get up the next day.
Thank you, Dr. Popper, so much for writing this book. I recommend everybody pick it up, because it, especially if you know people that have illnesses, this is a really easy read and great way to get people to come over to the power of food.
Well, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
Let's take a quick break. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. And we're going to be back in just a few moments with Norman Phelps, the author of Changing the Game. We'll be right back.